And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 870. It's a guest episode. It's been a couple weeks. Bubba's been slacking. It's been a little busy over here. So we're bringing the heavy hitters to talk some prospects. The MLB draft took place a couple of weeks ago, which means first-year player drafts are kicking up. Maybe even guys we should be interested in for fantasy baseball next season, because a lot of college guys went early. Kids, as I like to say. But in order to help me talk all things prospect, first-year player draft and more, is one of my brothers from another mother, from the ITL Nation in this league, for those that are living under a rock. He is the creator of the Prospect One podcast, one of the big dogs in the fantasy baseball MLB over at Fantasy Pros, over and doing betting pros and fantasy. It goes on and on, and I'm just going to stop now because we have to record a show. You can find him on Twitter at isitthewelsh. The Welsh. How you doing, my friend?
I appreciate it. Yeah, and people also do not care. They're just like, cool, great, he's doing stuff. That's awesome. They're like, big deal. I do all the stuff and things. Love you, man. One of my longtime, not just industry friends, but real friends. So if Bubba calls, I answer. That's how it works.
I appreciate it. Before we start, do plug some of your work. You said nobody cares, but you do a lot of stuff. So plug some goodies before we start talking prospects.
Okay. So the biggest thing you can do to always benefit me or help me or whatever is sign up on our Patreon. You are with the Bubba and the Bloom Patreon, as people should be. If you want another little element of it, you can check out mine at InThisLeague.com. That will take you to our In This League Patreon, why you might care. Top 500 prospects for fantasy, top 400 dynasty for fantasy. I've got 75 plus on the first year player for fantasy. Those were all updated like 3 days ago. Do it once a month. You know, sometimes they get stretched here or there, but I just added all the first year player guys to their own list, to the 500 and to the dynasty. And I do it monthly, and you can check out all of my ranks based stuff. Plus we got, you know, like GroupMe rooms, which is similar to a Discord. And it's just a way to support what I do. That's like the biggest thing, but you can check out all the stuff I do. Prospect One podcast. I do the In This League Fantasy Baseball podcast. And then, of course, my work is Fantasy Pros, where I host Leading Off on the Baseball Pod. I also do other sports and stuff like that. But we do a prospecting segment every week. It's very unique. It's kind of different than what I do. So you can support the Fantasy Pros stuff by subscribing to our YouTube, youtube.com/fantasyprosMLB, and watching the videos that I'm on and saying awesome, wonderful things about me, how handsome I am and smart and how Bubba and well. You can do whatever you want, as long as it's not mean. And then more granularly is check out In This League, check out Prospect One, and then sign up on the Patreon. Those are the best ways to do it if any of that is your bag.
Yeah, definitely go check it out. Welsh is one of one in this game, and I feel like prospects, he's got you covered over there. And you also get to hang out with his good buddy Scott Bogman, who's kind of like a mini-me with hair. So it all works together in the grand scheme of things. But it's going to be kind of an open discussion on prospects for the listeners out there, but then we will hone in on the draft and talk about some stuff for first year player drafts and everything, because that is coming up, right? Like real soon. I know in our Discord, we're getting a lot of questions about, I need to know, should I hold these guys? Should I trade these guys? So on and so forth. So we're going to kind of get some broad discussion there. And I want to kick it off with when we're talking just in general, because for those that might not know the Welsh, he lives in Arizona. I'm not going to give out his address just yet, but he goes to a bunch of the games on the backfield. So
going tomorrow, by the way, I'm just throwing that out there. I'm going with my son to see Spider-Man. But before that, we are going to stop by the Mariners for the White Sox Mariners Bridge League game, which should be the number one overall pick in the draft. Rock Jaloski might be there, as well as guys like Ace Reese. So sorry, I didn't mean to jump over you, but I'm literally going tomorrow to hopefully get a little bit of an eye on those guys before we go see Spider-Man Brand New Day.
And I'm going to actually ask more specific questions on Arizona shortly, but prefacing that, Welsh goes and sees a lot of these guys. So he's paying attention to a lot of it. And even like rehab, like, you know, and Max Kepler was de-juicing. Welsh got to go see him and stuff like that. But I guess in a big scope, any major surprises in like minor league baseball prospects wise this year, like big storylines, I guess, like for you?
Oh, so like broad, not just Arizona.
Yeah, just broad. Just like this guy really shined, because we're going to talk later on the guys that impactful and up and down, but like just broad storylines that kind of get surprised you in minor league baseball this year.
The storyline thing, it's kind of intertwined with I want to put it kind of intertwined with some of the pop-up guys. I mean, I'll tell you this, the Braves, there's something in the water for the Braves, because I would say if you were to ask me, like, hey, who are the top five prospects, pop-up prospects that really jumped? Or even if you said three, you know, give me three prospects that really made a gigantic move. Two of them would be with the Braves. So there's something, I don't know, just Eric Hartman and Tate Southestine. Both of those guys have made just like absolutely dramatic jumps. And I guess the other team would be the Rays. The Rays have also done that with Theo Gillen and Nathan Flewelling and Cooper Fleming. And then they just got Grady Emerson, the second overall pick. So I think if we take it from that little perspective, there are two teams that made these huge jumps, into the Braves being a really mediocre minor league system and the Rays being fine, to them being upper tier ones. I think that's a storyline. I think the storyline of the college bats and maybe the progression of teams wanting to push up prospects is kind of the big one, because we had so many prospects that broke camp this year, kind of record setting, if you will. You know, JJ Weatherholt, Kevin McGonigal, they were able to break camp. Then all of a sudden, you know, these lists are, players are coming off here and there because you're getting aggressive assignments from AAA. And I think the storyline to that, from aggressive prospect assignments, which by the way ties to the Arizona Fall League, which I'm very attuned to. You were with me last year at the first pitch for AFL, in that teams pushed players to the AFL that then were able to push for playing time. Look at the magician as Merlin Valdez, my dear friend. He is like, you know, one of the talks of the town. He was literally the Barry Bonds of the AFL to start. We thought awesome. He was going to run away with the MVP. So the storyline stretches from the Arizona Fall League being more of a building ground for Major League Baseball, rookies and those AFL guys getting playing time, to then an MLB draft that was, it's more college centric. And that might have a lot to do with potential labor agreement things, teams wanting players to have less of a, I don't know, like a runway of having developmental time. And MLB as a whole has also kind of dangled this, you know, oh, hey, by the way, we're not looking at cutting more minor league teams. You know, they're doing that as in a, like, we're totally not doing that. You know, like, we're the humblest. Like, we have even considered that, when in reality, I think that's something that's always looming over, because they, if people forget, they did cut like two or three different systems. And it's now down to rookie ball. There's Dominican, there's rookie ball, and then there's just A, high A, double A, triple A. That could be looming as well. And that could play a part in teams just not really wanting to screw around with development and stuff like that. So, you know, from like storyline standpoints, I think those are more macro. I think then, you know, unless you're wanting me to touch on a couple, then I think it becomes very like player specific. There definitely are some players that have had just these huge rises and they kind of become their own storylines. But that's kind of, in my mind, is the, you know, the focal point of what the minor leagues is becoming for a lot of teams and how aggressive they are, be it high school or college and whatever the hell I said.
Okay. A couple of things I want to pull off of there, like the AFL for one, it's in recent years, we've been getting a good amount of the bats, but the pitchers don't come, which I kind of, yeah. I get the pros and cons of that. Do you think, like, because you actually are really good at, you do a show for Prospect One where you kind of predict the rosters before they come out. So you kind of have an idea of what teams are doing. Do you have a sense by watching the season? And we're going to talk again more players specific later, but just in general, do you think that trend's going to continue this year? Because we still will have the AFL, even if there's
what a lot. of crappy pitching.
Well, no, just to keep getting these stud bats, I guess. Pitching, I don't expect good pitching to go. I don't expect good pitching to ever go. Like, that's just the reality. But the bats, because it is getting. It seems like a couple of years ago it wasn't great, but the last like 3 or 4 years, it's been picking up shop again.
I think this year is special though. I think this could be the biggest year. And I think it is 1,000% tied to the potential labor strike. Cause like 2 months ago, 2 or 3 months ago, I had two trusted people that are intertwined in baseball tell me that their connection, which were literally like GM. So it's like, I am like the third party to it. Like, they're the median person, but their connection to people that were in baseball was like, hey, listen, we're not going to really get a strike. Like, maybe the strike is April and then games start back up in May, but that's a worst case scenario. Now, public face, what are we hearing? There might not be any baseball in 2027. It has completely changed because of how bad the negotiations have gone on. So my take for a little bit has been that if you are, and also there's this whole thing I have been convoluting, and it's, I guess it's been clear to me. I still am not sure I believe it. I figured there would be no minor league baseball whatsoever. because the minor league baseball players, players as a whole are with the MLBPA now. They like, that's why they get, you know, they get paid money year round and stuff. That's a PA thing. So I figured, well, if baseball is shutting down and it's a PA situation, everybody involved would, as I'm told, it's just guys on the 40 man. So if they're not on the 40 man, I guess that would theoretically allow them, there would still be a minor league season.
Still development.
Okay. But my main point to that would be is if there's going to be so much missed baseball, that's fine that there's going to be that, but there won't be a spring training, or there won't be a version of spring training that you expect if it's just a few minor leaguers. So with that, I would think that teams would be more aggressive, especially with the players that are pushing double A. Now, I can't be 100% about that. I mean, you never know. Teams, the typical type of guy that goes to the Arizona Fall League is like, A, you missed time. B, you missed a tiny bit of time. C, it's you're a Rule 5 guy. And D, it's you're close to the majors. All of those are still in play, but maybe this time you might see a little bit more AAA, and you might see guys that really wouldn't normally qualify, because it's like, it would probably behoove these teams to let these guys get extra at bats, push the season, because they're going to have less of a workload. And then my big prediction for the Arizona Fall League, so my answer has obviously been yes, is I think we have the potential, I could be wrong, but the potential to see more players than we've ever seen before that were just drafted play in it.
Awesome.
That's my big thing is I couldn't give you an exact number what the most amount of that year drafted players to an Arizona Fall League was, but like this past year, Ethan Petrie, who by the Nationals, he was just drafted and played. A couple years ago, Nico Horner did it. There's always like one, maybe two. I don't know, man. Maybe we could have 5 to 10 of like, why wouldn't? There were so many college bats drafted. Why wouldn't teams, if these guys are going to get a handful at bats and then they're going to be stunted for 3-4 months or something like that, why not let them play in the Arizona Fall League and get, you know, pro tutelage and learn? So that's kind of my take on it. So yeah, I think the bats continue. And I just think as an overall, we could see a little bit more talent in the Arizona Fall League than we've seen in years past, simply because of what is going on with this potential labor strike.
Well, as much of a fan as I am of visiting FPAS and AFL, I'm looking forward to that, because that'd be pretty nice. As someone that goes to a lot of the games in Arizona that we already hint on there, I guess just seeing in person, because you're seeing a bunch of it's rookie ball, or you're seeing rehabbing or a bunch of developmental stuff before they go out to low A most of the time. What I guess is like one of the bigger surprises player-wise that you saw in person in Arizona that you're like, wow, this guy much better than I thought.
The first one was Luis Hernandez, who with your Giants, who I guess that one's a little bit older now, but that was one where I went and saw him and Josuar Gonzalez really early. And it was actually also against Steele Hall, and Luis Hernandez just absolutely stood out, just beyond belief. You'd be shocked at just how like strong he was. A 17-year-old kid, youngest guy in the Arizona or in the Arizona Complex League. He stood out like crazy, and that kind of carried over. He cooled down, you know, as it got hotter, and then he's gone up to A ball and things have looked good. He was definitely one of them. I saw a decent amount of the Rangers, and Kim, the two-way player, pretty good pitcher, really good hitter. But the other guy, the other two-way player, Josh Owens, is someone I was really into. You see a lot. I've seen way more than you would probably guess of two-way players in person. I have seen Maury with the A's, Owens, Kim, Lynn with the Reds. I mean, there was a time Hunter Green was a two-way player. And the best two-way player that has actually exemplified, and not counting Ohtani, by the way, the best two-way player in the minors I have ever watched that exemplified it was Josh Owens. Josh Owens can hit. You look at him and you're like, wow, that is like the body of like a right fielder. He can hit for power. And he comes out and he just throws bangers. Like he gets strikeouts, he gets guys out. He's a consistent pitcher. So Josh Owens is one that, like, you know, when you kind of ask me that question, it jumps to mind. Oh, and then the other one, really, really impressive, was Christian Arguelles with the Colorado Rockies. He finished a second straight year hitting 400. He hit 400 last year in the DSL. He hit 400 out here. Smooth swing. Both of those guys, I believe I have either videos on my Twitter timeline at Is It The Welsh, or you can check my Instagram. I've definitely put video. I have a really good triple from Argulis over at the Padre side. But yeah, those are like the three players that immediately came to mind that really stood out. I think I probably had some expectations on Hernandez. I did not have expectations on Argulis, and I kind of really thought Josh Owens was going to be more gimmicky than he was, but I was really impressed with him.
And no, I did not pay Welsh to start that off with the Giants prospect because it's pretty sweet. Hernandez and Josuar just got promoted to San Jose, so it's about an hour drive away that I told myself I need to go check that out.
Yeah, and they got pushed up because rookie season just ended. That's the other little side thing is that has changed kind of the prospect landscape. Kind of gives me a little bit of an edge if I get to do them, but the rookie ball has ended a month early, and it now, you know, so it just ended. That's why Josuar and Luis went up, because they didn't make the ACL playoffs, and then they get called up, so they get playing time. But then the bridge league starts up, and it's like a bridge or continuation league. It's called, it's essentially an instructional league that plays, but nobody knows anything about. There's no stats, there's no scoreboards, there's no behind the scenes, there's rosters and schedules, but nobody get, and they can treat it however they want. They can roll innings just like instructs. And that's where all of these guys are going to go play. So it's this little like hidden thing that happens where the, unless they get called up to A ball, you might, this happened with Steele Hall last year. You will have drafted prospects not accumulate stats, and no one will know what the hell's going on, because they're playing in this bridge league, which is kind of the new founded thing that, that's attached to rookie ball rosters and stuff like that. And usually the first week is the college guys. So that's why guys like, Rock Chulosky and Drew Burris and stuff might play, and then they'll move up to A ball, where the high school guys will likely stay the majority, maybe get a small cup of coffee at the end of like September or something to go up to A ball.
Guess you can get your updates on the Prospect One podcast or the ITL with Patreon on that good stuff. All right, let's talk MLB draft. You mentioned Chulosky quite a bit. He was like the, everyone thought he was gonna be the number one pick. He wasn't. He was the second pick in the draft. Or no, he was the first pick. Sorry.
No, he was one. He was one.
Grady Emerson. Yeah, he was one. Grady Emerson was two. And it goes on and on and on. But a ton of college players, which you mentioned earlier, and I was kind of noticing that just as the draft went on, like between watching the Giants and just other players, lots of big bats went early. I guess, again, we'll talk macro level at first, and we'll break down the draft. What was your thoughts, I guess, on the early part of the draft, the part of the draft that like matters for, you know, initial fantasy, I guess?
I think it's playing out how it's kind of played out. I think teams are scared. I think you saw that, and I use scared loosely, but it's like an example was like the Pirates and the Royals. They passed up some pretty talented players, and what did they do? They drafted like fine players. Pirates drafted Derek Curiel, and the Royals drafted Zion Rose, but what did that amount to? They both took players that were $2 million under slot. So I think teams kind of want, or at least in early financial ties, are targeting themselves to maybe floor players, players that maybe have a little less commitment. I think it kind of showed with, there's this kid, Jacob Lombard, who's really talented, George Lombard's brother, who fell. And I don't even think teams considered him because they'd already made their draft plans around, you know, here I save money and I do this and that. But yeah, it was super college heavy. Also probably a weak pitching class. There was only one pitcher taken in the top 15, and that hasn't happened in God knows how long.
Gigantes.
Yeah, exactly. Flora. Yeah, but I think it was really college heavy, and I think it makes first year player boards really weird, where there's plenty of years where we'll say the same thing. We're like, hey, it's top heavy, and then there's value. But like this one is like really the case after the draft that, you know, there are some high school guys that signed later. There's some really good values and stuff, but you also are seeing a little bit of the impact of NIL. I think NIL played a role in some of this, where I think maybe even a guy like Derek Curiel, I think, who could have gone back. I think he was like a redshirted sophomore that he signed almost last minute. And you had quite a few high school guys, specifically Logan Schmidt, who was the second round pick with the Guardians, did not sign and went to LSU. So like, I think there is, and I think maybe that's what you saw in the draft, if we're just talking like philosophy for a second, is that teams putting less of a commitment to high school players that have NIL placement and going with what they know, and or getting the college guy, get the savings, and then try to spend up later. Cause that's the dumb thing about baseball draft is that, you know, they have these slot values, but then a team can pay $3 million over slot. Like, it doesn't happen in the other sports. So because of that, teams get a little bit more finicky, but I think there's just more NIL is having that risk into the high school guys and guys coming out and stuff like that. So yeah, I think it's just pushing a lot more college guys. There's a lot of pitching depth in this class, but there's just not elite. It is sure not last year. There ain't no Cade Anderson, Seth Hernandez back to back, but there's some okay players. So I think there's a lot of potential for the first year player board to look weird. However, we're going to look at it right now on my board. I did a show with James Anderson and Eric Cross and Lucas Morrell doing a first year player draft on RotoWire. And I kind of said that there when we were picking apart the picks, I just was like, you know, listen, everybody listening and paying attention, this is our early valuations. And I think it's more important than ever before. There's a chance this could really open up because I'm not sure there are that many players that stand out from another. I think if you look at tiers, like my top tier is kind of set, but then the buckets become bigger and bigger. And it's like where maybe four tiers of prospects in years past might have accounted for like 20 players. You know what I'm saying? Like here's tier one, tier two, blah, blah. Four tiers now might be like 50 players, you know, because that tier three might be huge and that tier four might be really huge. So I think there's a lot of potential for things to kind of adjust and change and stuff like that. But yeah, I think we're seeing a lot of like exterior baseball things that might have affected some of the draft, and we've got to try to decipher through it.
Yeah, I'm glad you hit on the NIL. I was going to ask you about that because I know the Giants, for one, like I think they lost a third baseman back to Georgia or something because he got more money, but then the Giants used that money to spend extra on another, like just slots you're talking about. So it's interesting watching it all come to fruition, at least from the little bubble I live in. You kind of hit on it there. So with the first-year player draft, before we get into the players, probably the last thing we'll do before players, when you're entering a first-year player draft, you can use it for this year, in general, whatever you want. Like, how do you approach a first-year player draft as a fantasy dynasty type player that is, I guess, you know, you're going to have to decide who you're keeping on your dynasty, so on and so forth. Then you have your picks. How are you going about a first-year player draft, or does it depend on if you're trying to win now, I guess?
BPA. It's almost exclusively BPA at all times. Best player available. I think there are some people, I know where you're going with this, like win now teams, the strategy might be you sell those picks for pieces that can win now. I'm open to that. Some people might say I want proximity only players. I'm open to that. Some, I won't touch high school guys. That's kind of the proximity thing, or specifically I won't touch high school pitching or whatever. That's fine. To me, I am solely built around taking the best available players because positionally just doesn't matter to me. You know how many shortstops are going to become center fielders or second basemen? Like, I don't care about position. Like, the most thing I guess I would care about is pitching versus hitting. I might pay attention slightly to what I have around me, what I've built in my minor league system. Ideally, I'm a dude that's just like, I'm winning. I'm here. I'm playing to win. I'm always playing to win. I'm not in major rebuild. But this actually came into place last year. I'm trying to remember one of my drafts. I play in a couple really deep ones, 16 teams. And one of them, I think I had a really high pick and I was trying to decide between, I'm forgetting the hitter, so forgive me, but it was that and Cade Anderson. And I was really high on Cade Anderson, and everyone was just kind of, I don't say anyone was indifferent about him, but I'm pretty sure I was one of the highest. I had him at 2 overall, and everybody else had, you know, like Eli Willits and JoJo Parker and stuff like that. I mean, I kind of screwed up because I didn't have Eli Willits at the top, but you know, I think that's what it was. I think it was a decision between Ethan Holliday and Cade Anderson, and that was a situation on my team where I thought they were close enough, but I thought I had such a bad minor league pitching staff and he was so close to coming up and I thought he was going to be an elite pitcher that I did go with Cade over Ethan. And that really has worked out for me because I mean, Cade looks like, you know, maybe the top prospect in all of baseball, but for the most part, I like to play it BPA with a slight lean if I have any positional needs, but I don't let, when I say positional needs, it's hitter over pitcher. I am not going to be like, well, I'm going to take this outfielder because I need this outfielder and I'm going to pass up this shortstop. Like, nah, dude, like these guys change positions all the time, at least from the infield. So BPA is my best strategy overall.
All right. I guess you kind of answered it, but if you're getting ready for your first year player draft and you have potential picks to trade, you mentioned these big buckets of tiers. How do, I guess, picks change value this year compared to previous years, if that makes sense?
So, like, when do the tier changes?
Well, because, like, some people will ask me, like, I'm going to trade this player and my third round pick for this player and a second round pick. Like, you know, the past, maybe if it was only 20 players deep, that third round pick could have been more valuable. But if there's, you know, 50 players now, maybe the third is not as bad, so you could probably get a similar player in the fourth or fifth.
I agree with that. Like, also, I think, I mean, I'm obviously like a little bit different because I'm more hard-headed in stances. But I know there'll be like listeners that you'll just be like, well, I'm a James Anderson guy, and maybe there's a Welsh guy and stuff like that, and you only care what they have to say. What's going to happen is like, when you get, this is why I don't get caught up in like third and fourth round picks and stuff like that, is because when you get to the third or fourth, like, the values are so big. People might get stuck on one player. That doesn't mean I can't get my guy. I think players are going to fall a lot more. I think in this first year player specific, I'll be honest with you, I do think there's a lot of strength in the like 20 to 35 range between some really high end high school guys and some college pitching. So I think that's a really great spot to be in. So if you're playing a 12-man league, like, I don't hate trading down from a second to a third, or if you traded out of a late first and you got like, you know, 2 seconds and stuff like that. I don't get super worked up about second and third swaps and stuff like that, because I think you can make whatever you want happen. Like, Dax Kilby is a prime example of this last year. Dax Kilby looked like he was like a second round first year player pick. And then everyone went through the freaking moon, dude. There was a couple reports of, oh, his data behind the scenes and this, that, and over at the Yankees complex. And all of a sudden, Dax Kilby became from a mid-second-ish guy to like an early first. I had somebody tell me they took him over Ethan Holliday. My point to that is, like, if you're getting worked up about second and thirds, if there is a guy that is going to get all the hype in the world, you ain't getting him with your second. He's going to move way up. So I just think you still, it's so wide open that there's not like definitiveness in the picks that I'm okay making those type of swaps. And I'm also okay if you're going to ask it, like, I think the first round specifically, how I do it on my page, or well, my prospect list on my Patreon, is I do my first year player board, and obviously they're ranked. But I'm the only one that's ever done this because visually it's important to me. I don't know if anybody cares that I do this. The rank I also put like it's a draft. So the top 15 players are in round one. And I show 1 through 15. I say they're a first round pick. And then prospects 16 through 29 or whatever it is, 16 through 30, that's the second. So I organize it so you can visually see this is what the rounds would look like. But I do it in a 15-team marker. For all that to be said, is that like, I personally would not be moving off of my top end first round picks. Like, if I have the top two picks, anything outside of that, I am willing to move down on. I'm willing to move from the mid first to the late first. I'm willing to move maybe more specifically from the late first to get a couple seconds, because there are guys, when we talk about these buckets, there are guys I like in the 20s. That I rank in the 20s that I do not think are that far off from guys I have in the high teens that are in the first. So that's kind of where I'm going with that. I think I would not be the type of person that trades one of my, if I have one or two, everything else I think is on the board for more picks.
Perfect. Okay. That's good to know. I don't know if you're down to give away your goodies, but
sure.
What makes your top two guys so special? Are they the top two picks of the draft?
Yeah, they are. It's rocking. Okay. And we can talk about any of the stuff you want.
Okay, cool. I didn't know because behind your paywall, so I don't.
No, it's all good.
I always forget. So you got Rock Schawoski and you got Emerson. Those are your top two from the draft. Top two in your first year players.
Yeah, I'm.
What Rock are your expectations for them? I guess.
Okay, so I'm Rock over Emerson. There are some people that are Emerson over Rock. I think they're 1A, 1B. If you want, I think ideally what you can look at is Rock is not a stolen base guy. There's some questions about like wood bat stuff. I think it's a little bit overblown. But I think he's 30-plus home run power. I think the guy can hit. I think he's not going to struggle with big strikeouts. I think he's a middle-of-the-order type of bat. Maybe in a – this is a rough comp, but like in a Corey Seager-like type of player. Maybe a little bit less average.
Hopefully better.
Not with the counting health. Emerson, like last year where we had Holliday versus Willits, and that was like power, questionable bat versus like maybe a little bit unknown bat with lots of speed and questionable power – Willits answered all those and is amazing, even though he's struggling right now. Emerson is probably one of the top like bats. I think the speed is fine. I don't think it's Willits like, and I don't know where the power is at. they're just 1A1B to me. So if you want proximity and power, and I think a 2-year run before you want Rock, if you want a little bit of baseline on stolen bases and maybe a more complete five tool, then I think like Emerson's fine, but you're going to have a 2-year gap between them. It's the Rays. They're not going to push them. So those are my two dudes. They're in a bucket. I think Von Lackey is like right after that, but he's tricky because he's a catcher and catchers are weird unless you're Bubba and you love your catchers. But catcher leagues, Vaughn should go up. But Vaughn is kind of like a Rock at the catching position, but he can also steal bases. It's like super athletic. He could be a 20-20 guy. And he actually also played third base at Georgia Tech some. So if he ever played third base, watch out. Now you got like a 20-20 guy at third base. So I think those are all kind of interesting, but that's where the draft opens up. I think for the majority of first-year player, it's going to be Rock and Emerson without question. Lackey might be weird. He might not be, but I think he's the safest play. But then after that, things just start to like open up.
So when we be your second bucket, then when you're talking that, it opens up, and I guess obviously you're not going to go straight down the draft board to make it your rankings. I'm talking about the MLB draft board to your fantasy draft board, but it was like a ton of outfielders going off the board, a couple of pitchers, like you said, handful of shortstops. Like, who stands out for you from your second tier? Like, you know, just a couple names that stand out to you there.
Well, interesting note in your chat, Magpie said top four in MLB draft look like top four in first year player. Kind of not wrong. I think in a points league, I don't have Flora as like my number four overall player, but obviously if you play in like a points league or I don't know, like I told you before, like proximity and pitching and stuff, like Flora is not going to be Cade Anderson, but he's up there. I mean, I kind of want to call Rock and Emerson like tier one and Lackey's tier two, but like just for argument's sake, we'll kind of call them like the top bucket. My next bucket of players is like 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. It's like roughly 10-ish players. If I want a bit more granular, it's probably like 5. I'll tell you two players that I really like inside my first round. So my first round is 15 players deep, my top 15. Two of my targets are Drew Burris, who I have really high of him at 4 overall. I think actually James Anderson is with me at 4 or 3. I love Drew Burris. I love the idea of him. I mean, I really love the thought if he could be hitting in Sacramento, by the way. That would be incredible. But by the time he comes up, it'll probably be in Vegas. But really good, like, pull guy, pull air percentage guy, hits the ball hard. He's kind of a smaller dude, but he's, like, stocky. He's going to hit a bunch of bombs. The guy can run. He's a big personality. Like, I think there's so much to like about his game. And I think regardless if it's Sacramento or I've kind of speculated that I think Vegas will probably play like Arizona does. You know, Arizona is like a high elevation environment. That's like a dome stadium. They don't obviously whatever they do, if they do anything to humidor, it doesn't really have an effect. So I kind of think I'm just assuming maybe that's not the smartest thing, but like Vegas will play similarly to Arizona. And you put Drew Burris in a hitting environment. Hell yeah, dude. So I really like Drew Burris. And then the other guy, this is a total me guy this year, is Trevor Condon with the Cardinals. I love Trevor Condon. He kind of has a little bit of the like the Corbin Carroll vibe, a little bit of a smaller, like 5'10", 5'11", but kind of skinnier guy. He just makes a ton of contact. He's going to hit for some power. He's going to run. I think he's going to continuously build. I think this is going to be kind of an analytics guy that they're going to learn to barrel. He's going to get the ball in the air. And then all of a sudden, he's just going to do a bit of everything. Like I said, 5 tools out there, but he's not the biggest guy in the world. And that's kind of one of those ones where I think I'm higher on Condon than most. So like at 5, I've got Jacob Lombard, who I talked about, tooled out player. But let's say 6. Let's say I got the 6 pick. And someone's like, hey, I want that 6, and I will give you the 11th pick, and then I'll give you like a mid-second round pick or even a third round pick. I might do that thinking I'm higher on Condon than most, and I pass up a guy like, you know, Jackson Flora or Eric Booth or something, and I could trade down and get Condon and then get an extra third rounder. That's the type of stuff I would consider doing. So Condon and Burris, those are kind of like my dudes in the first round of first-year player.
Just in general, because you mentioned 2 outfielders, we talked 2 shortstops earlier. If you were, I guess, building your game plan for the first-year player draft by who you're keeping, who you're trading, whatever, what position are you thinking has the best returns? Like, I know outfield is usually deep in general, but if you're going to this draft, like, soon impact, like they'll be with you in the next year, two, three at most. What position are we looking at?
Yeah, outfield. Outfield. Because I was going to say, like, if you talk about positional, like, return long-term, I think shortstop is, like, the best bet. Because shortstop has got Rock. It's got Emerson. It's got Lombard. Tyler Bell is a college bat that's in Colorado, which is really good. And then you go deeper. It's got guys like Rocco Maniscalco, who I really like, Taj Marchant. Like, it's really good return. But if you're talking about recency return, if you're looking at college outfielders, you're looking at Eric Booth Jr. You're looking at Derek Curiel, AJ Gracia, and those are all first round. Zion Rose was also drafted. I mean, Sawyer Strassnyder with the Brewers. Like, you got a lot of return guys. So I guess you could also say pitching, because there's like the three of the four top pitchers were college. So it's probably pitching or outfield if you want immediate return. But the best bet is shortstop. And this draft is very robust and, like, really, really good shortstop. Some good second round shortstops and some good first round as well.
I'm not going to go through each bucket because we don't have all day. But in general, like, you've mentioned some of your early targets. Give me two, just like, if I'm, you know, round five, six, I'm deep into the draft that I'm circling, I guess, to surprise people.
Okay, so round five or six in like a 12, so like in the like 60s, yeah. Do you want? Okay. Sure.
Just or it could be anybody. It could be in the 80s or 90s. But like two guys deep that will return surprises.
I'm going to do you a little better. I'm going to give you some names. I'll give you like a guy in the 20s, a guy in the 30s, and then I'll give you like two in the 40s and 50s.
Pencils out, class.
Yeah, there you go. I really love Bo Lawrence in the 20s. Dodger, of course. I actually got to see – I haven't seen a ton of the rookies, but I was at the Dodgers a week ago, and they were doing their – you know who's running their rookie camp, by the way? This is going to blow your mind. I'm at the Dodgers, and I forgot about this. They are doing rookie camps, and it's former players. So quick story aside. I'm at the Padres the day before. Here are the coaches at the Padres rookie camp, and it was Robbie Hammack. Crazy. Jesus. Tim LaCastro, crazy. Glenn Hoffman was there.
That's awesome.
And then, damn, I'm forgetting the other person, but the Dodgers one's more exciting. So I'm at the Dodgers and their coaches are there. Jason Hayward is coaching the rookies. I'm standing there and I'm like, who is this tall ass dude with these killer shoes? And he looks like a school teacher with all these kids walking with him, walks by. It's Jason Hayward is coaching with the Dodgers. Wow. And he was running the rookie camp there. And then, by the way, walks by me halfway through the game, Chris Archer, who's a pitching coach of them. And then the best one, Nelson Cruz. Nelson Cruz just walked by. He's got his hoodie on. Yeah, he works with them. So it's like these young guys are working with them. So story aside, Bo Lawrence is a big physical third baseman, but he told me he's going to continue playing shortstop. I think Bo Lawrence is going to be a dude. He didn't put up super impressive MLB draft combine stuff, but he can run. He's got big power. He's a huge guy. I really like him in the 20s. Going to the 30s, I like Aiden Ruiz. Well, actually, Daniel Jackson. I'll give you two. Daniel Jackson with Colorado. He was Golden Spikes out of Georgia. Huge, huge bat, and he just went to Colorado as a catcher. I also like Aiden Ruiz, who the Pittsburgh Pirates took, shortstop. I think he was a really sneaky pick. Going into the 40s, I'll give you a 40 and 50. Oh, yeah, Jaron Avankula. I don't know if I'm saying his name correctly, with the Angels. I thought that was a sneaky pick. That's someone I'm going to be targeting in the 50s. Bubba, how about Peyton Bonds, Barry Bonds' nephew, who is jacked? He was a third-round pick. He looks jacked in probably all the healthy legal ways, and dude can fly the ball. I think he's someone that I think for a lot of levels of interest out there. And then now we're kind of in the range of what you were talking about of like the deeper plays. I think the Diamondbacks took a kid, Blake Bryant, and this is, by the way, kind of my range. So understand, like, I'm still adjusting to this. Someone might be like, no, dude, Peyton Bonds is a top 20 player. But in general, I think some guys in the 50-60 range that I would be targeting deeper in, Blake Bryant with the Diamondbacks, they gave him overslot bonus. That was kind of their big target, really talented pitcher. Alex Weingartner with the Chicago White Sox is a high school bat that they weren't sure if they could sign. He looks really, really interesting. And Jackson Willits with the Angels was Eli Willits' brother. So I think those are some, like, deeper plays, you know, will they last to the fifth? I don't know. Like, people can get overly excited. They might push up, but those are guys you should like easily be able to get outside of the top three rounds. And that's just scratching the surface. Again, I got 75 posted. My next update next month will probably be over the 100 marker, because I'm going to get to start seeing some guys. Hopefully tomorrow I see a few, and over the next 2 weeks I see, because there's going to be eighth rounders and 10th rounders that start to shine, and there's going to be guys that are going to get early season stuff. But that's kind of like a broad look at a few of the targets all around on my board.
Beautiful. If people want to see the whole board, again, go check out the ITL Patreon, check out Welsh's rankings there. Let's get to more this season or early next season stuff here. Are there any prospects not named, and this could be from the draft or just in general prospects, not named Kane Anderson or Joshua Baez, we should potentially be excited about for fantasy this year? Is that kind of ship sailed by now?
For this year?
Yeah.
Those are definitely the two names. Okay, I think the key there is what you said, excited about. I mean, I think that's like the group. I can give you like one. Two. Never mind. I think the excitement really kind of went down. I think Max Clark, I have been a Max Clark stan the whole season, and he's been held down. He's been at AAA the entire season with the Tigers. The Tigers season looks about done. They are likely going to trade Tarek Skubal, and when they do, that is full blow it up mode. And then that, to me, would be, why would you hold down Max Clark any longer when he has had almost 400 at-bats at AAA this year? 400 at-bats where he has hit 10 homers, 21 stolen bases, and hit 277. Everyone will love Max Clark. You will love Max Clark long-term. He's a high analytics guy. He likes to post about it in the offseason. He tinkers, and he's the type of guy to me that could be a 15-30 in the first 2 years. So I would love for him to get some opportunity. George Lombard. Jacob Lombard's brother, George Lombard with the Yankees. That could be, it really depends what they do. If they fail to get a shortstop, literally anybody is better than Anthony Volpe at this point, defensively, offensively, and Lombard has really made some good progress. And actually, this is the other one. This is the other duh name I forgot about, is Kalen Culpepper. Kalen Culpepper, also, if the Twins decide to blow anything up, Kalen Culpepper, I've been waiting for forever. He is a power speed combo guy. And then, you know what? I got one last one. Charlie Condon would be the other one.
You gave me a list of, we did a show last Tuesday about this.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, it's like, so Condon, Culpepper, those are kind of like the two, the big ones that I think are like duh obvious. Max Clark and Lombard take a little bit more, but those would be the four guys that I think would hold excitement. I don't think you're going to see Ryan Sloan with the Mariners, as far as if we're looking at pitching. I don't think you're going to see like Gage Wood with the Phillies or anything like that. And Thomas White has been hurt. So I think your hyper-focus needs to be like those four guys. Those would be the only four I really care about the rest of this year.
Perfect. That leads me then, I guess, what could be some prospects we're not excited about this year that might come out of nowhere and surprise us next year? So like those people that I know, I always do an off-season like draft and hold show with different prospect people. If we're starting to plan ahead now, say there's some dumb people that draft in August, are there any prospects we should potentially be looking for that might be ready to have an impact next year?
Okay, yeah, in the majors. I mean, there's three obvious ones. Jesus Mate, Leo DeVries, and Sebastian Walcott. All three of those guys are blatantly obvious. They've been held down all season long. They will all end the season at AAA. And I think there is a chance... Leo and Walcott have both played in the AFL before. I don't know if Mate will. I don't know if any of that actually matters. The only reason Mate is going to, or Walcott's going to play in the AFL this year is because he literally just came back from injury ago. So I think he will. Those three guys, I think, are the duh players. Like DeVries and Mate specifically, maybe DeVries at the tippy top. Walcott's got a little bit more of a path because of missed time, but like those are like the most talented guys that I would pay attention to. Walker Jenkins, that is one that, I mean, he's a top 10 prospect in baseball right now. He's hitting almost 300, six homers, 10 stolen bases, and he's done it in under 200 at bats. He's had a lot of injuries with the Twins, but that would be a guy that I think next season, you know, they could be rolling out Walker Jenkins and Kalen Culpepper. So I really like them. I want to say the Dodgers guys, by the way, but like they're just never going to play. Like Jesus or Josue De La Paula and Mike Sirota are amazing. They're incredible talents, but I don't think that they're going to be able to find room. They never do. So From a hitting standpoint, besides the guys we've talked about, I don't know if there's any. Okay, there's one other sneaky one. Aiden Miller. Aiden Miller was someone we would have paid attention to this year because Alec Bohm's contract is coming up. They don't have a third baseman. I thought they would trade him off. And then guess what? Aiden Miller hurt his wrist and hasn't played the whole year. So if he's healthy and he plays in the Arizona Fall League, he could be one of those guys. And then, yeah, I would agree with Mark on this. Franklin Arias would be another one. Unfortunately, Arias might be doing it for another team. But those would be the big hitters I would be focused on. If I was focusing on pitching, it would probably be like Ryan Sloan, Gage Wood with the Phillies, and maybe like a Jack Weininger. Those would be those would be kind of the early look players. There's going to be other stuff that we're going to see. I'm probably leaving out. I mean, I didn't say Andrew Fisher with the Brewers. He might come up this year. Caleb Bonneberg could come up. But like if we want to get like hyper-focused, let's focus on those hitters. And then from a pitching perspective, Cade will already be up. I would say like Ryan Sloan and Gage. I mean, also last year's draft class was pretty sick, by the way, with college pitching, because it's like Tyler Bremner, Gage Wood, and Jamie Arnold. Those are like four of my top seven in fantasy right now. And they were all from last year's draft class, and they all could potentially be up. So I don't want to discount them, but yeah, it just depends on like what level of aggressiveness you guys want to have.
All right. On the flip side, because we're excited about those guys for next year, are there any surprising names this year, kind of on the higher scale of your prospect rankings, that were very disappointing and they've kind of like not moved off your list, but moved so far down where you don't really want to roster them, I guess? Like, I mean, off the top, you guys even stand out in that regard.
Yeah. Just explain to me roster, like roster in a dynasty and a
keeper. Like if you're in a dynasty, league, because I think if they've fallen so far down the list, we're probably not doing it in a redraft or a draft and hold, but in a dynasty league, guys that have really lost their luster for you.
Okay. I mean, dynasty can be tricky because in a lot of dynasties, you're not necessarily dropping players, but a couple of the players that have like really dropped favor for me, Jett Williams was a big one. I think it'd be hard to just cut Jett Williams. But if I have a top, if I'm only keeping 100 prospects in a league, Jett's not one of them. And Jett looked like he was primed to take a position. He's dropped like 80 spots for me outside of the top 100. He's been so piss poor, even though he's learned so many other different positions. Jonah Tong has been really disappointing. That's been a big move down. Like he looks like he's going to be in relief. One that hits home is Slade Caldwell with the Diamondbacks. Slade had some injuries and has really fallen off. Now we're starting to get into the range of outside the top 150 guys. If you don't roster, if about only 150 are rostered, I think that's where a guy like Slade has moved off of a player that I wanted to own to I don't. Gavin Fien was one of those that I was pretty dang high on. Nate George with Baltimore. And then if I go outside the top 200, again, I'm trying to, you know, for you guys in dynasty and stuff like that, like I play my dynasty league, I play in the 16 team. You don't ever have to cut prospects. So there's no limit, it's unlimited. But then I play in Scott White's 24 team points dynasty and you have 10 minor league spots. So like everybody's treats different. Go. So that's why I kind of dance around this stuff. Oh, this is a big one. Cruz Schoolcraft was a Padres prospect who I had as a borderline top 100 guy, big freaking physical dude, multitude of stuff. He's looked horrific this year. He has absolutely no feel for command. He's getting beat around across the board. He does not look good. And I have had a heavy dip on him. I got a few other guys, but those are some that have dropped from, you know, inside the top 100 out, some inside around 100 to the out plus 150, and then some even outside of the 250.
All right, last thing I have before we do some listener questions here. You kind of mentioned the Braves and the Rays at the top of the show, but if we're entering the offseason, and like I said, if you're doing a draft and hold or you're doing just redrafts in general and you think a guy might take a whenever the season starts next year that you think will get a shot to make an impact, what teams seem to be ready to utilize, I guess, their youth the most and or have the most fantasy juice, I guess, right now?
So like similar to what the Cardinals did in JJ Weatherhold, yes. Like that. Yes. Okay. Yes. Well, that's an interesting question. I think the A's jump out to me again. Leo DeVries. I think Jamie Arnold is a guy that would do it. I think the Minnesota Twins in Kalen Culpepper, Walker Jenkins, yeah. Emmanuel Rodriguez. I mean, I guess if you're going to look at that, you kind of have to look at like teams that are not
availability.
Yeah, it's like availability. Like they're not stacked across the board. Like it's the Dodgers.
Dodgers are stacked, like, but there's nowhere to play.
You know, a funny one, which we would have said last year, which isn't really this year, would be like the White Sox. the White Sox are a team that really have found a lot of their pieces, though I will tell you this, you didn't ask me this, and I don't know if it's coming in, but I think Rock Chulosky is someone that could be in the Arizona Fall League, and B, I think he's a player that could be vying for an opening day spot. And James Anderson agrees with me that we both think not only is he a guy that could come up early next year, but he might even vie for a spot. So all that to say, I don't think the White Sox are that team that would utilize it, but you know, that is a very specific player to it. I think those would be the two teams that jump out to me. I do think there are certain scenarios with some others. I mean, I'm kind of staring at some of these teams like the Padres. I would say the Padres, but they don't have like enough players. But Ethan Salas just went to AAA, so he's a guy that could move up. Cardinals have a few pieces as well that we're still like, Quinn Matthews, Joshua Baez, when are they going to come up? We'll probably have a better answer to this if we see any teams really deplete themselves. So like if the Twins decide they're not in it, and they want to sell off some pieces, that could bring up a bevy of prospects. If they go for it and they don't, well, guess what? You're probably not going to go into next year with like Cody Clemens and Josh Bell and stuff like that. Then that opens up the Twins to have like a whole barrage of guys. And remember, teams get PPI. They get the extra, the pick incentive, the player pick incentive, if they have rookies that are starting out. So will it be as sexy as it was this year? I don't know. You know, we had McGonagall and we had Weatherholt and Carter Griffin. I don't know if it's going to be that sexy, but is it possible? It is. And that could be in the form of a Jesus Mate and a Leo DeVries. And, you know, I don't know, maybe a couple other guys. It's a definite possibility.
All right. We'll get to a few listener questions here. I think it's a great, the last couple of years, we've seen more and more youth get called up is what I've called them. Cause and it's really been something to watch on some of these.
Yeah. Seasons. Oh, by the way, good thing by Magpie. I just wanted to mention, I forgot spinal. It is a spinal injury. There was a wrist thing. Yeah. I forgot. I think I misspoke. There's that spinal injury going with Miller that really capsized the year. So when we loosely say him, we are very contingent on where the health is and what the recovery is. And like, I've been told it would be AFL, but I also haven't heard an update anytime soon. So God knows, but pay attention to that. So sorry.
All good. All good. PJ in the chat says, I'm sorry I'm late. If you haven't discussed Jacob Lombard, which you did, I'm curious if you think they will shift with him or Iva Arquette to third base to accelerate the progression.
I don't think Jacob Lombard is going to be a progression accelerator. He's a little raw. There were one of the reasons he fell was like some of the bat to ball skills people were concerned about. So I think they're going to take their time with him. So I don't think there's going to be any concerted effort to move anybody. Usually that happens when they share the same levels or something like that. So I'd say no, but I do think Arquette's probably more of a tradition. I mean, he's got a hit if he's going to be a traditional third baseman, though. He's got a hit for like power. You can't have like seven stolen bases unless you're Michael Garcia out of third base. So I don't know. I just think they're a little too far away that any of that's going to matter. Frankly, Jacob Lombard to me screams like a center fielder in the future. So that also might be his path.
All right, in the Discord here, our buddy TDK says, I'd love to hear some informed talk on Leo DeVries. You mentioned you expect him to be one of the impact guys next season, but he's flying through the minors. What would be your expectations, I guess, if he were to start the season with the A's?
For next season? So, okay, yeah. It's really interesting with him because I kind of go back and forth. I got to see him a ton for a couple years when he was a Padres prospect. Really, really interesting guy that... The power's always been my real question with him because like he's had a couple moments and I've got some videos from the Fall League like 2 years ago, if people want to check, where you can see like, you know, I think it was a both sides of the plate, two home run game he had where you can see the power display, but he's just not really built around heavy power right now. He does have 12 homers, which is impressive. You know, in the 300 something at bats, he's stolen a ton of bases. It's been really good average. My assumption is, there could potentially be some early struggles. I've seen some struggles with him before, some kind of slow starts. I think the major leagues are going to be a really heavy transition. I think that transition is going to be built around him trying to find ways to just make really solid contact and steal bases. So people might kind of look at him and question some of the power. I think the long term is like he has potential to be a special player. You know, that switch hitting ability to hit on both sides of the plate. He can tap into that power. He's stealing bases at an aggressive clip, and he has progressed every single season in a hitter-friendly environment. Like Leo DeVries has the potential to be a 2 or 3 round like fantasy asset in a couple years. I just do think maybe out the gates it's a little bit slower. Like I do not think Leo DeVries is going to do what Weatherholt or Kevin McGonigal are doing, where they're top 10 in WAR in baseball. Like, I don't think they're going to be like that, but I think they'll be fantasy relevant. And that's why I said I think they're worth drafting. I wonder if the power is going to be a little suppressive early on. Like Kevin McGonigal, he's been awesome in real baseball. From a fantasy perspective, if he wasn't hitting for batting average like he is, yeah, we'd be a little bit like, I don't know, because the power and stolen bases are not elite. They're nothing crazy. You know what I'm saying? So, like, Leo DeVries, if he struggles on batting average a little bit and the homers come down, he's going to have to really lean on, like, you know, scoring a bunch of runs. But, like, how high is he going to hit? You're not going to hit above, like, Jacob Wilson, and they're going to have Soderstrom there, and they're going to have Rooker, and hopefully they're not going to have Lawrence Butler, you know, that type of stuff. So, I guess I'm like, a little bit muted on it, if that's how it sounds.
No, I totally get it. That's why I've been kind of wondering, like, where's he play? They are loaded at the moment.
Ted, oh, yeah, said, positionally, it'd probably be second base, by the way, if I didn't answer that. Jacob Wilson's their shortstop, so he'll be a second baseman.
That checks out with that roster. Ted says three hitters that will be slept on in first-year player drafts. Ted, rewind about 25 minutes, and you got a lot of them. So go
yeah, we talked about a bunch of them.
Mailman Mike says, following up on Ted's question, who are some deep sleepers to keep an eye on? You hit on those as well.
Should I give another? Like, okay, sure. Like,
Throw out another nugget.
Yeah, let me look. I mean, I gave a bunch of names. How about, and again, I do want to point out that, like, late is relative. Like, there might be someone that's like, this is my guy. You know, as people come in, they're like, this is the greatest player. Like, it might be different. Luke Williams is one. I think it's super interesting with the Washington Nationals. I've got him relatively low, and maybe I shouldn't have him as low, but I think he sits in that same bucket of like Alex Weingartner with the White Sox, which that's, I think, maybe more of the sneaky ones. I don't know if it's like really, if people are really in on him, but I'd look at him and Luke Williams as maybe like late guys.
Sounds good. Kalen says, are there any prospects possibly on the move this deadline you expect to make an impact this season? I know it's just, you're purely speculating here, Welsh, but any names that are rumored around that you would think could benefit?
That then they would have a fantasy impact in season? It's
tough to predict. But
yeah. That's really, really tough to predict. I would say Franklin Arias is the one that jumps out to me. If the Marlins were to trade, I'm not saying they're going to do this, but I imagine to get Otto Lopez, when you have the batting average leader, they probably have to give up a guy like Franklin Arias. I think that would be a pretty good spot for the Marlins to bring. Again, think about no baseball next year and all this stuff that maybe Franklin Arias could immediately come up. He's a Red Sox shortstop, had a phenomenal year. Andrew Fisher with the Brewers. I think I have been very strong team. Tarek Skubal gets traded to the Brewers. I know there's a report out today that says every team is bracing because the Dodger. I said this on, I did a hit on CBS Sports HQ the other day, and I said this. I went, if the Dodgers want Tarek Skubal, they'll have him. There's no other team that is going to compete with them. But the difference between that is, do they want them? And the reason I say that is Dodgers got three outfield prospects that would be the best prospect on any other team's minor league system. So if they really want them, they can overwhelm anybody. But because of that, they never seem to give up stuff. I don't know if they do. So I think the landing spot that I think the team that should be most aggressive is the Brewers. And I think a guy like Andrew Fisher, who has just hit like his 33rd homer in the minors, he's got a K problem, but he's been electric. That would be a guy that, like, he could get traded, and like, why the hell not? You're getting no production out of guys like Colt Keith and Spencer Torkelson and stuff. Like, why not? And Baez, let Andrew Fisher come up and have some playing time. Now, those were the first two guys that immediately jumped to my mind as far as like, they would get impact if they were traded to another team. There's a whole other game to be played of like, if teams trade away players, who are guys that get a boost? I think you did the show with me where I said, once the Angels trade, like, if they trade Jose Soriano and Reed Detmers, George Klassen would be a guy that would come up and get some runs. So those would be a few quick answers.
For sure. All right. We got Ben Ted says, does the Welsh think that there's a realistic chance that the Yankees call up George Lombard Jr.?
Yeah. I mean, I said it before. The reason it doesn't happen is because they go and acquire some other bats, but they have a roster that rivals the badness of many other teams. You know what I'm saying? Like, it is Ben Rice. It's a shell of Jazz Chisholm when he decides to be good, and it's garbage across. Like Jose Caballero is a fun player.
Yeah, but
no, it's bad. everybody else stinks. So, and Anthony Volpe is just so bad. So it's like, how much longer they have to go through this? Now, if they go and fix the problem, they've been rumored with Neto. Yeah, duh. Like Lombard's not going to come up or anything like that. But if they don't and they make a concerted effort to maybe get an outfielder or they don't pull off any other big trade, like why wouldn't they consider that? What are they losing in keeping Anthony Volpe out there? It's a far reach, and I'm not saying it's a definitive. Like I have way more faith that Coylan Culpepper and Charlie Condon get called up, but like this has been rumored. This has been rumored that he could come up and maybe give them a jolt. It's that whole like PPI thing. Would they hold him back? Is it going to be contingent on the trade deadline? I'm not 100% sure, but yeah, I do think there's like if you ask me to give percentages, I'd say like 40-60 he comes up. You know, it's a little less than 50%, but it's close enough.
It's on the table, Ben. Yeah. All right. Market 8 wants to know, where does the Welsh have Connor Griffin in keeper leagues next season?
Ooh, let me pull up my dynasty list on inthisleague.com on the Patreon, which you guys can see. So, you know what's really funny about this? Go listen today too to the live stream we did on Fantasy Pros. Bubba does these sometimes. It's an hour long live stream. It was me and Joe Rico. And the reason I'm saying this is we had this Connor Griffin question that was really trippy, and it was like a $16 Connor Griffin for a $33 Francisco Lindor. And now on the paper, that seems stupid. But he was like, but it's only two keeper hitters, two keeper pitchers, and I'm trying to win now and I have no shortstops right now. So I'm like, oh, okay. Then the next level of digging deep was like, but who are your keepers? Because if you had two guys that were blatantly obvious, I guess I could maybe argue Connor Griffin isn't a big deal and you don't want to maybe keep him, but it wasn't. So I told him, I'm like, I don't care. I'm not trading Connor Griffin because Lindor's not that great. But there's a lot of discussion in that. I have Connor Griffin as a first round in keeper. So
beautiful.
That is, or in dynasty keeper can kind of change if you keep a certain amount of players and whatnot, but like overall, let's call it like top two rounds, but I have him inside my top 15 in dynasty.
You got it. Just a couple more. Red Shark says, what's the Welsh assessment of Hayden Alvarez?
I spent a whole season watching Hayden Alvarez with the Angels. It's really funny because everybody was super focused on Josue Lugo when they were there. And Hayden Alvarez was just this dude that was quietly banging around. Really nice guy too. Big physical athlete, hitting .297, 9 homers, 44 stolen bases he's put up this year. And maybe ironically, the Angels aren't doing their thing anymore. Remember when they would just like fly guys up systems? They've let him kind of marinate the whole year. I'm pretty hyped about him. I am. I think I need to reevaluate where I have him on my own ranks because the stolen bases I don't think are going to continue. I think he's going to grow into like a much more physical guy. But I think there's a lot more power potential in there. And what you have to love is he's not striking out at like a ridiculous clip. So I think there's like, if you want to play the super upside right now, you could call him a top 150 prospect. I think he's like safely like a top 200 to 250. I mean, he is doing this at A-ball. He's doing it age appropriate and stuff like that. And I have, so maybe that doesn't sound like I'm like insanely excited, but I am. I think there's like a lot of good runway and he has a chance to be a top 100 prospect early next year. So.
Good. Mark Jordan wants to know, what's your take on Nolan Perry?
Ooh, Nolan Perry or Nate Perry?
He typed in Nolan. Maybe it's Nate.
You would know. Okay. No. Yeah. I think I'm thinking of the Marlins guy because we just, which now I'm having to go see, who am I thinking of? Nate Payne. That's who I'm thinking of. Sorry. I was thinking of Nate Payne. So I was working out alive. Nate Payne, I've done a whole bunch of conversations on. Nolan Perry, huge strikeout numbers, really good ERA. I'm kind of finicky with Blue Jays prospects sometimes that I want to see them like push a little bit further. Gage Stanifer got a whole lot of run this past season, but I mean, Nolan Perry looks like a top 100 pitching prospect. From a performance standpoint, I think it's like 100% been there, but he's injured right now. So I don't know how much that's going to take him out of this season, but two straight seasons of like a sub 3 ERA. He had missed 2025. He's right up there. You know what a question would be? It was like, Ricky Tiedemann, who's coming back. Yeah. Ricky Tiedemann has missed so much time. I'm such a Ricky Tiedemann stan. And he's trying to kind of refind himself. But I think, like, I think Perry has kind of moved past him on that. And I mean, Perry's projecting out to probably make it before Tiedemann. You know, another side note, I wonder if Perry would be a guy that we see in the Arizona Fall League. He's only stacked up around 50 innings. He had missed all of the year before. Blue Jays have been aggressive with pitching prospects. Maybe we'll have a Nolan Perry sighting. But kind I mean, I don't know if that
Tiedemann last year.
Yeah. Well, Tiedemann was like 3 years ago. And then he got injured and missed so much time. But I think he would be like a likely AFL guy. I'll probably put him on my list. But hopefully that answers it. Like, from a value perspective, I think, you know, probably top like 100 to 150 guys, somewhere in that range.
All right. I got a few more. Alex, what's your take on Demetrio Crisantes?
Diamondbacks, Demetrio. Demetrio's a local kid, too. Physically really grew, by the way. That was one of the big things. I saw him when he was here in rookie ball. Dude looks like he's put on like 20 pounds of muscle. He had missed a little bit of time with injury, but 7 homers, hitting .301. He's already pushed up to AAA. Super, super hyper-aggressive assignment, which I wonder why. I mean, like, just to point out, like, it's not like he's been in that system for like a really long time. So I haven't really 100% understood that, or at least from a mid bat perspective. I guess he has been 2023, but he's moved through kind of like 5 levels this year, all the way up to AAA. He's dominated, hidden for batting average at every stop. I think Crisantes to me is like, it's kind of like a Perdomo type of player. I think he's gonna make a ton of contact, not strike out a bunch. I think there's 15 to 20 homers in there. I don't know what the stolen base thing is about this year, but I've got him inside my top 75. So that's my value range of Crisantes. But there's a lot of only problem with the Diamondbacks is it's like middle infield of Perdomo and Marte is stuck up for a long time. They've got a lot of corner guys they play around with, like Gino Grover and then Tommy Troy. So it's like, I don't really know what the plan is. I probably need to pay attention to where Crisantes has been fielding and whatnot, but he's going to have to hit to stay up, and luckily that is the thing that he does well.
Michael C, we already answered your question. Some late season prospects that may get called up for redraft. Sonics asks, when will the Arizona Fall League schedule be released, and which top prospects does the Welsh think will participate? You already mentioned Chakowski. Give like 2 or 3 more guys you expect to be there that we should be pretty pumped about.
Well, I mean, that's a tough question. I have not done my show. I will do a show. I have not sat down and done any of it. But I will tell you, Chalosky is one. And then, as I said, I think Sebastian Walcott is like a guarantee.
He should be locked in.
He was supposed to play last year. He got hurt after I was at that first game. He got hurt and did not play again. He is as lock as I can possibly imagine. I'll be going through and I'll do a full show on this. Because I'm going to start asking people. I got to be honest with you, I've actually had a name or two kind of given to me, and I kind of forgot. I think there was one big name. So I got to kind of redo my rounds, and then I'll kind of go through my process. But if Aiden Miller's spinal issue is there, I think he's the biggest no-brainer of no-brainer, and I think Ricky Tiedemann could be back as well. But as we said in the beginning, I think there's going to be some big names that are going to be out there. So I will probably do that within the next couple of weeks. You asked on the rosters. Unfortunately, the AFL is really lame about this. Back in the day, dude, we used to get these in like July. We will probably not get this until a week or two before the Arizona Fall League. So that is probably like, mid-September when they'll release it, and it sucks. So I will try to get my prediction out in probably late-ish August.
Perfect. Last question from the chat here. Jim Poppin says, thoughts on teams extending players before they make their debut. Is this a good move for both sides?
I think from a players association standpoint, they don't feel good about it because these guys are always signing these like 9-year deals for, you know, $80 million and stuff like that. But I think it's good. I think, like, do we really think we would see Cooper Pratt and Luis Lara up with the Brewers when they're running for a pennant and at least given the opportunity to succeed had they not signed a deal? I don't know. I'm not really sure that would have happened. So, yeah, I think the teams extending is a good thing. I think it's coming from a weird, bad place in that maybe teams feel that this process is going to change. The PA is going to ask for less years in the future, less arbitration, whatever type of thing's going to go on. So like, you know, teams are trying to like get guys in. So I think that seems naturally weird, but I think from like, for our perspective, hell yeah, dude, I want to see guys get signed up. I want to see them play. It's just, if you are like a, if you're a, I'm a player warrior and all you care about is the health of the players and they make their money. Like, I'm so sick of hearing millionaires scream with billionaires and fighting, and players be like, you know, when I make $100 million, I get taxed and have to only have 50. It's like, shut up, dude. I don't care what, like, you are talking to the wrong people talking about what you get taxed. And I'm so sick of all those things. So from that perspective, I'm not a warrior of the type of person that's like, I just want them all to get all their money. And it's like, they're going to get their money. It's baseball. Like, that, they're in a great spot. It's beautiful, cool. For me, I care about seeing the players produce. I want to see them out there and get opportunity. And I think them signing those contracts gives them those opportunities with teams. So you don't get all that stupid bull crap where teams are like, well, needs a little bit more seasoning and needs a little bit of this. And it's just like, nah, dude, Luis Lara signed his contract. They kept him down. They brought him up and he's, you know, he's looked really good. Same he's with Cooper in. Pratt. So yeah, I think it's a solid thing, but there's plenty of arguments, like I said, that people are going to say why it's a negative, because it's bad for the players and they could get more money and stuff that, like, I don't care about.
And on that note, we'll wrap it up, amigo. Always great chatting with you. We could talk baseball forever. That's why we do it once in a while. And you do it all over the place with ITL, with Prospect One. One last time, plug everything, and we'll have to chat again sooner than later.
Yeah, man. InThisLeague.com. If you, any of the prospect stuff we talked about, you want to see my 500 prospect list, my 400 dynasty, that's overall dynasty stuff. I sort out the prospects by team and position as well. Top 75 first-year player board. I also do a prospect ADP. I haven't done it in a while. I'm going to be doing one in the next month where I create like a 200 ADP of prospect where people draft and people get to take part in it. If you're a part of my Patreon, you can do that. That's a way to support me. I really appreciate that. If that financial way is not what you can do, just like listen to the stuff that I do in this league, Fantasy Baseball Podcast, Prospect One. Those are really great ways. And of course, if you can support me on Fantasy Pros, that would be awesome. When you support me, you're supporting Bubba. Bubba's on Leading Off some of these times. So come and watch us on Leading Off, youtube.com/FantasyProsMLB. And just quick search, you'll find all that. I mean, I guess I kind of said everything and then I'm like, oh, don't worry about it. Just search. But like, if you search, you'll find the stuff. Is it the Welsh on Twitter? I post all the stuff that I do.
Yes, check him out. If you're not already, you should be. But as always, thanks for joining me, man. We will chat soon.
Love you, brother.
Love you too, man. Everybody's Bench with Bubba, episode 870. Catch y'all next time.